KXNO. Ken Miller, Trent Condon. They are Miller and Condon on Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
All right, good morning, everybody, and welcome to a Friday on Miller and Condon. Trent Condon, Ken Miller with you for the next couple of hours as we talk sports with you on a busy football Friday. A lot of ground to cover on the BMW of Des Moines guest list coming up on the program here today. Friday, always packed on Friday. This one being absolutely no different. First up is going to be Tom Cakert, HawkeyeReport.com. Hawks a 23.5-point favorite over Conference USA's Middle Tennessee State. Tom Cakert will preview that, and we'll talk some Hawks with Tom at 10:25. Dylan Motz from the Ames Tribune slides on in here at 10:45 in the 11 o'clock hour. We are going to talk Chiefs. We are going to talk Vikings and Bears. Bama Bob will be with us. Trent, Bama, and I will go around some of the marquee games in college football. We'll give you, the audience, an opportunity to win some barbecue from Claxons about 11:45. And then for what they were worth, and certainly last week they weren't worth a dime, our picks coming up at 11:50. But for the first time this year, I believe you get the T-box, right?
I do.
Bad. Let's do this before we get on to sports. And this isn't a victory lap by any means. Take no joy out of this, but the Register, because it was such a talker, and we talked about it on our show, and that's why I want to bring it up here today. Aaron Calvin is not the scapegoat in this. He should have never been hired in the first place if the Register would have done their job, and that's the bottom line. I mean, it's embarrassing, their HR department, how they let that slide through, but for the tweets that, and then here's the other thing, he's not a young kid. Let's take that right off the table. These first tweets are when he's 22, 23, 24 years old. I think he's about 29 or 30 right now.
Yeah.
Blank the NYPD cops or whatever it was. Blank the, if that was just a standalone, okay.
It's a line from a rap song.
Right. Okay. Not the best look, but, it's more than that. It's a body of work. As a journalist, and that's what he is. Can't have that. He had to lose his gig, and that's why I was willing to say so as soon as the story broke, for the most part, as soon as we had our first chance on Wednesday to discuss it, and said the same yesterday. I don't want a pound of flesh. It was the right thing to do. The Register, again, that's how this got by them in the first place, is just an egregious, embarrassing human resources blunder, and it was a blunder. And I've seen some, is it really his fault that they hired him in the first place? Should he lose his job because they didn't find these out? Of course he should.
Yeah.
I mean, if you own a convenience store in your name, you own Condon Convenience, and for some reason the cashier you hired, you didn't look into his background. And when you did, you found out, months later that he was working the till, he dipped into the till at Casey's and Come and Go. He's going to lose his gig.
Sure, yes.
I mean, he's a pharmaceutical salesman, and he's got a problem with drugs. And somehow his drug test got mixed up and missed. And then you find out about it. What are you going to do? Of course he or she are going to lose their gig. It was an HR blunder to begin with in the first place. The kid had to lose his gig. He's a journalist. You can't say those things. Those racist tweets, you just can't do it. And again, he's not 14, 15, 16. He's 23, 24, 25, 26, 27. And he's had a couple of opportunities. He graduated from college. He's a journalist. I said my piece.
People are held to a higher standard, a different standard, depending on your chosen profession.
Right.
And with that, these kind of things happen. And as a journalist, these types of things, how they were not found... they said there's some kind of vetting process. They looked through.
Piss poor.
Social media, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You just push it through. The guy obviously had to be pretty talented at this point in life. And you look at some of the places that he has worked for.
And the other thing is, too, is he had to have known that,
Yeah.
But when he was hired, and the fact that somehow they didn't look back and find those, just a terrible. And the reason it took as long as it did was we speculated on Monday. Corporate gets involved. Mm-hmm. Corporate lawyers get involved. This is going to corporate. This is a national story that took place in our backyard that blew up and went national. He didn't lose his job because he was told to go back and find and report those tweets or however they came to be. He didn't lose his job because of that. He lost his job for the stuff that he said as a grown man, as an adult in your 20s.
Good news is that we will get to see Carson King out on the field tomorrow.
It's a great story, Trent. Yep. You know what? If anything, this has even elevated, I believe, him in people's eyes.
Yes.
If he was an 8 out of 10, you know, as far as we saw him before, and that's pretty high because no one has a consensus opinion. He's even elevated. I don't know what he's going to do in his life. You know, sadly, the law enforcement community is going to lose, I think, a pretty good prospect because that's what he wanted to do.
Oh, really?
I don't think he can do that now. There's so much more out there for him to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
His dad was an Altoona, and maybe still is, an Altoona police officer. He wanted to follow his dad. I get that. I did. I wanted to. But there's so much more for him. He can do so much more, I think. And I don't know what it's going to be, and I look forward to, you know, watching Carson King, where his next steps may be, because he's taken the right steps, Trent. He has not missed a single beat. He's handled this better than I can ever recall anybody handling it. Because when somebody gets caught doing something, the apology is never accepted.
No. Well, speaking of apologies, the Des Moines Register's second apology was never an apology.
From last night?
From last night.
Yeah. You know, here's what...
It was excuses again.
Right. It was... They tried to explain their way out of it.
I don't like that. I just don't. I when you make a mistake, own up to it. That's what Carson King did.
And what was their mistake? Going, making that part of the story to begin with?
Passing blame, not taking it head on. And really, they never apologized. They just apologized. We screwed this up. Make it very simple. We screwed this up. Don't blame the reporter. Don't blame the editorial staff. Don't blame society as a whole. None of that. The Des Moines Register screwed this up. We took a great story, and we made it worse than it needed to be. We screwed this up, and we apologize.
One little pushback, and I don't disagree with your premise. I wonder, and we can't find out any clarity on this. Did Bush Beer know this? Did Anheuser-Busch know this before anybody else? Was Anheuser-Busch going to sever ties with Carson King? Or did they find out? I doubt they found out at the exact same time. But did the Register find out, or did Carson King find out that the Anheuser-Busch was about to sever ties? I don't know. I cannot find a timeline on that. And if Anheuser-Busch knew before they and didn't learn from the Register, and we're going to go forward that night with it, then I could see why the Register would go forward, at least put it out there. But I don't know the answer.
Because the Register said in that statement last night that they were not the ones that notified Anheuser-Busch.
Correct.
About the tweets.
And Carson King was notified.
And a lot of
notified,
people are struggling to believe that.
That's true. I get it.
Because the timeline, it's difficult to wrap your mind around. Maybe it's as simple as that Anheuser-Busch themselves did exactly what the reporter for the Register did and combed through his old social media and found it themselves. Right. This is a billion dollar corporation.
Right. No, I get you.
This is
how
huge.
About Waterloo? So I was driving home from work yesterday and got a call that Waterloo Oktoberfest had just dropped Busch Beer from there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I guess Oktoberfest is this weekend or some big celebration or next. I don't know when it is, but
the one's happening downtown here?
Well, I don't know if they're serving Busch Beer. I mean, an Oktoberfest serving Busch to begin with?
Well, you know, you don't have to have a German beer.
Don't you?
Just have a beer.
I guess. But if you got a choice, I'm not just killing Bush. I might even give up Stella if I got a chance in Oktoberfest to have a German beer at Oktoberfest, right? But I don't know the timeline. I mean, Carson King apparently was contacted by Anheuser-Busch in the middle of the afternoon or late morning. I don't know, but he was the one that then decided to get, he handled it all the way. He handled it terrific. I have no problem with certainly the way, I mean, how can you have a problem with what he did? He was fantastic in all of this. But again, I get this is not a victory lap. I have no joy in what the Register did and the fact that they had to do it. He's a journalist. They had to do what they did, and it was very clear. It was very clear. Doesn't absolve the way the rest of it was handled by any means, but we've said our piece. And the only reason I brought it up today is because we talked about it, and we like to focus on sports in these 2 hours. And this is not a judgment on how anybody else does talk radio here or anybody or anywhere else. But we like to focus on sports when we can because we kind of see this as a getaway, an escape. you know, from the real world. We get to talk sports, and we're very lucky to do so. We'll talk Hawkeyes coming up here at 10:25. We'll talk Cyclones at 10:45. Trent, the NFL game last night. I want to save a couple minutes for baseball because we won't have time.
No.
The NFL game last night, you know, that was an entertaining game.
Mm-hmm.
I thought there was a couple of violent hits in the game. I mean, violent hits. The punt return, the helmet-to-helmet on the, I think it was the first punt of the game. And how Shepard, I think his name is Shepard, the kid that that caught the punt. How the officials missed that is beyond me, and the fact that they can't go back like they can in college and actually get it right when they miss it. That's not because the flag wasn't called in the first place, the NFL. They can do pass interference, which is, you know, a whole lot of the story. But the game overall, Trent, I was entertained.
I
don't
was
know
too.
About you.
Yes, it was an excellent game. And after the Packers jumped out 10-0, well,
you're thinking to yourself, this
here we go.
Right.
Here we go. But Philadelphia's ability to run the football.
That's what, if you're a fan of the Bears or the Vikings or the Lions, and you think of this Packer defense, boy, they've got a defense this year. Well, their run defense leaves a lot to be desired.
And this was a Philly team that hadn't been running the football very well coming in, but...
And an ex-Bear of all things,
yes,
right?
You saw it was a concerted effort from the get-go. They were going to run the football. This was something they were going to rely on. They were going to flex their muscle there. And it's something that Philadelphia... What is it? Doug Peterson, I think, hasn't had a 100-yard rusher in something like, it's a huge amount of games.
Yes, it's crazy, yeah.
They were talking about that last night. So because of that, thought, well, you can see this was going to be the plan going in. There is a way to get after this Packers defense just a little bit, and it's running the football. And, I mean, this goes all the way back to the opening Thursday of the year with Green Bay and Chicago and that awful game plan by Nagy and company where they didn't throw the football, and they had the 22 straight
didn't
dropbacks.
Didn't run the football.
Or didn't run the football, yeah. It was all Trubisky and 22 straight dropbacks and a 7-3 game during that whole run. Just a terrible game planning there. Now you see it. Now the blueprint is out. Of course, the Packers will come back and adjust themselves, but certainly not only the loss, but the way that it played out gives hope now, I think, to the Vikings, to the Lions, to the Bears going forward. And that Vikings-Bears game this weekend gets even bigger.
And how about next week, the Packers at Cowboys?
Yes, should be.
No, you're right about
good run.
Let's not wish away this weekend. And here's the bad thing, though. And I'm having trouble keeping up. I am having trouble keeping up. So Dish TV's is lost A, B, and C. Now, as of tonight at midnight, DirecTV's going to lose A, B, and I don't know. Man, there's so much. And then if we throw in... 665, NBC Sports Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
They leave, I think, both platforms on Monday of next week. So watching the game last night, and I'm sure you saw it crawl at the bottom of the at the bottom of the screen. We already know that Dish has lost Big Fox, FS1, and BTN.
It's a blow.
It's a huge blow for football. And apparently, Fox went to Dish Network and said, you know what, we'll keep these up while we negotiate. And according to John Orand, who we both like, what's his sports business?
Yep, Sports Business Journal.
Do you know his Twitter? Is it
@OrandSBJ.
@OrandSBJ. Anyway, John Orand, he uncovered the fact that Fox said to Dish, let's not put our customers in the middle, which we are. Let's keep these on while we effort to come to an agreement. And Dish said, no, they're gone. And now they're gone. So if you're a Dish subscriber, you're probably already aware. But you're going to lose a lot of football programming this weekend. Now, to DirecTV. I'm pretty sure, again, I wish there was a place I could go to have it all in one place. I think tonight at midnight, we, DirecTV subscribers, are about to bid adieu to KDSM. So we won't get Vikings and Bears on Sunday.
Oh.
A week from Saturday, we will not get the Hawkeyes and the Wolverines if it lingers for a week. So prepare yourselves. It's not like you can cut the cord and go to Dish, because Dish is with it. They've got their own fight going on. I don't understand it.
All right, let's fast forward here to Saturday.
And it's next still, Saturday?
And it's still not resolved.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you've already talked about your concerns with you don't like when Iowa State and I were playing at the same time because you want to watch the whole thing. And this isn't resolved, and you're not going to be able to watch the Iowa game.
Well, I can downstairs because I have an antenna set up.
You have the antenna set up. So I would guess you would watch that live there and then go back in DVR and watch.
And then in the living room of the basement or whatever you want to call it.
Because I was going to try to see.
I'm not going anywhere.
You could go to a sports bar. You know, they have multiple TVs. You can watch everything there.
Man, I can't trust myself. This is a big part. I can't have one.
Okay.
I can't. And
they're Ubers.
Yeah, I know. I know.
They'll get you home.
That's true. That's true.
I'd be your DD.
Thank God for Uber. Anyways, I don't want to make this about me.
But it is about us. It's about us consumers.
Yes. And again, we're caught in the middle, damn it.
I'm going to Sioux City this weekend. When I get home, I just want to get home, be able to watch the NFL. And it's not going to be there.
No, it's not.
Not going to be there to go through this. And we went through this with Game Day and ESPN.
Yes, we did. And it kept. And Ray Cole, who was terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Ray Cole, I don't remember his Twitter handle, but he was Ray Cole. I'm sure you've seen him on Twitter. All the guys in the building here follow him and respect what he does and know what he does. He's the former...
President of ABC.
He was John Walters' boss. He was Zuba Mahente's boss. He was Dave Zavalinsky's boss.
Keith Murphy's boss back in the day.
He was Keith Murphy's boss back in the day. That's a good point. He was Keith Murphy's boss back in the day. Anyways, let's do this real quick on baseball. There's really only two, if you want to call the wild card race in the American League.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess you have to.
Yes.
Cleveland is still alive, but...
They lost again last night to the White Sox.
Now, if Tampa wins a game this weekend, or if Cleveland loses a game this weekend, Tampa is your second wild card team.
Cleveland has Washington this weekend.
Good luck.
Yes.
Good luck. Meanwhile, in the National League Central...
Tampa has the Blue Jays.
Do they?
Yeah,
I won't see I won't see any. So they should be fine.
Yes.
Is it in Blue Jayville or is it in Tampa?
It's in Toronto. Yep.
Okay. What was I saying?
The
Cardinals.
Yes.
So in the NLC Central, I mean, this is going to be really good potentially. But here's the thing: last night, I don't know if you saw this or not. Joe Maddon came out prior to the game last night. He's not playing his guys in St. Louis, and his quote was, and I'm paraphrasing. There's a lot of things I don't give a bleep about, and this is one of them.
Oh, wow.
He is not playing Rizzo or Bryant or Baez or John Lester's not pitching.
Mm-hmm.
At least that was the plan. He's going to play. Did you see his lineup last night? Heather had a great tweet last night. Basically, her tweet somewhere along the lines of, I feel like I've seen this lineup all summer long at Principal Park with the exception of Jose Quintana. And she was right on the money. That's exactly what he trotted out last night.
Jose Quintana finished his season.
Yeah, thank God.
The second worst of qualified pitchers ERA in the National League.
Did he really? And they gave up two studs to get him. Studs. Didn't work out.
No.
So... Maddon doesn't give a damn that the Brewers are one game back. And he's going to play, he's going to play whoever he feels like playing. And if one of the veterans wants to play, I'm sure they'll come to him and say, look, guys, Skip, I want to play. This will be it. But who knows? So it's going to be fun. Cubs,
might get a 163, game 163 there.
We're not going to trend. I hope you're right. I hope that somehow this happens.
Nico Hoerner with a big game.
Yeah, I mean, he's had a really good month, has he not?
He's burst onto the scene.
MediaCom is the way to go. I agree with you, but I got to have the Sunday ticket, and I have to. That's a tweet that came in. Jay Farver, our Cardinals fan, by the way.
Yes.
And there's a number of them out there, but he's the most vocal of them, the one that we know of. And he's right, but I have to have the NHL Center Ice package. I will not miss my Winnipeg Jets.
No.
I missed them for 15 years.
As they weren't a team.
As there was, they were gone. I will never miss another game if I can help it. Anyways, you won't want to miss, well, at least we hope. Okay, that's maybe a little over the top. Tom Kaker's very good. That might be a little bit too grandiose. But Kaker joins us. Dylan Montz will join us. Baylor, Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
Just real quick. Do you have an opinion? Are you using it in your pick? You usually don't. Are you?
I won't use it in my picks, but it is a game I'm going to be playing this weekend. I like Iowa State.
Do you?
I think they win this game, not handily, but they win it by 7.
I do too.
Seven to 10.
I think they have more talent. I think they have more talent.
Their defense is really good. How about Brewer last week getting ejected? I'd miss that.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I read a story, or I heard, I was listening to...
was the game out of hand? Well, it was an awful game.
And apparently he was arguing with an official and got ejected from the game. Not that he, grabbed a opponent's face mask. And, no, he got ejected for arguing. Have you ever seen that in football?
No.
I'm trying to think.
No. I mean, I know you get
Orlando Brown after he pushed the official after he got hit in the eye.
Yeah, you got to go there. Yeah, that was, did he not sue and win? I think he sued and won.
Yes, I think you're absolutely correct.
Was he a Baltimore Raven at the time? Or a Brown? That doesn't matter for the story.
Yeah. I think I misheard now that I'm looking at it. They were talking about him being part of the group thrown out last year.
Okay, yeah, right.
That makes more sense.
So he didn't get tossed last year, but he was right in the middle of it last
year.
Yes,
and there were some people that speculated maybe he'd have to sit out the following week. Matt Rhule would sit him down, something like that. That's what it was. So I misheard. Apologies. Always got to keep those ears open, right?
Yeah, well, I hadn't seen it, not that that mattered. I miss stories all the time. Anyways, Tom Kakert is next. Dylan Montz, we're going to play the hits in this hour. Hawkeyes and Clones in the 11 o'clock hour. We'll do the Chiefs. They take on the Detroit Lions on the road. This is Patrick Mahomes' first game in a dome.
What?
Up this weekend. Apparently so. Mahomes into a dome for the first time. There's not that many of them left when you come right down to it.
Yeah.
So we will we'll talk Vikings. We will do Bears, Vikings-Bears at about 11:05, 11:08, somewhere in there. Bama Bob, Trent, and I around college football. Claxton's Barbecue, our picks. We're here until noon. It's a Friday on Miller and Condon. Glad you're with us. Des Moines Sports Station, 1460.
Oh. Streaming live from coast to coast on iHeartRadio. This is 1460 KXNO.
Hi, welcome back. Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station. 1460 KXNO with you until noon. Alex Halstead, Ames Tribb coming up in about 15 minutes or thereabouts. We'll preview Baylor and Iowa State with Dylan. Right now, Tom Kakert, HawkeyeReport.com. It's the final non-con of the year for the Hawkeyes. They're back on the field after a bye week last week. Tom joins us. Tom, Trent, and Ken, thank you for coming on, Tom Kakert. How are you?
Doing terrific on this rainy Friday morning. I guess it's still morning in the beautiful Quad Cities.
You know what? We don't have rain here in Central Iowa, so maybe it's moving our way. It's certainly overcast, but anyways, Tom, you know, let's start with hoops. And I know there's a lot of excitement around this DJ Gordon, a four-star guard who apparently has got Iowa's one of his final six, and he paid an official visit. Boy, they certainly need a guard. That would be some good PR news if they can land this kid. What do you think the chances are DJ Gordon's a Hawkeye?
Well, it's interesting to me how it kind of evolved, because they had not set up a visit with him, and then Fran goes in. Well, the other development that happened was they just kind of played things out with Andre Jackson, the four-star guard out of Albany, New York, that Fran had a long history with, and he is, according to Jeff Borzello from ESPN, he's not going to make his official to Iowa this weekend. So then quickly, Gordon's all of a sudden magically coming to Iowa City for a visit. So, you know, it just, to me, that kind of tells me that, boy, there's some mutual interest there from the kid, too, that he would just kind of drop everything and head to Iowa City for the weekend.
Andre Jackson, he was kind of a long shot, a top 75 player from New York, had a Syracuse offer. Now UConn's involved. It was always a long shot, even with that relationship here. What else? What else is left for this recruiting class and what feels like a very important one? Though if Bohannon doesn't play, of course, that scholarship will be taken for Bohannon the following season. Xavier Foster, still the wait list continues there. What else, if anything, though, are they waiting on?
They just offered a kid yesterday, Josh Omagale, who goes to Worcester Academy, which ironically is where Ken O'Keefe and Kirk Ferentz first met when Ken was the head coach there, and Kirk Ferentz was the one of the assistant coaches and teaching, I think, English there or something.
Wow.
So just kind of a fun little nugget to chew on, but and the coach there. But yeah, Kirk Ferentz was here before. And I was like, yeah, I know that. So anyway, Omagale's a kid, a really interesting kid. He's from England. So Iowa has history with kids from England.
Well,
with
Cheney.
And, yeah. And you know, Ken and I were the first.
Yes, we were.
Of the bandwagon for Gabe. So yeah, he's a big kid. I saw him in a tournament they played in Manchester, England in December of 16. Wow. He was 15 years old and big lefty who could shoot it and, you know, big body. And he really has gotten a lot of, you know, the mid-major Rhode Island kind of offers, but he hadn't got the Power 5 offer. So sounds like he's going to visit the Penn State weekend right now. They've got to finalize that, but he'd be another option for them along with Xavier Foster.
Built like an offensive lineman, Tom. It's a big body. You're right about a big body, dude.
6'9" and, 265 is big body. So he's got a real soft touch around the rim, mm-hmm. left-hander. Interesting prospect.
Pulisic gets a hold of him. Doyle gets a hold of him. Anyways.
There you go.
Yeah. Tom, let's look back before we go forward. Michigan, Wisconsin last week, of course, both on the Hawks schedule. What did you learn?
Last week, just watching?
Yes.
Just watching football, I think I learned that Wisconsin is legit.
Yeah.
I think I learned that Michigan is a soft team. Northwestern does not have an offense, and right. Michigan State is schizophrenic. I think those are four of the things I learned.
It's a really good point, and this Big Ten as a whole, Ohio State, we'll see this weekend. They go on the road for Nebraska. Nebraska, we know, can score. The black shirts are that name only, more like brown shirts over there. But we'll see what they can do against Justin Fields and company. It's Middle Tennessee this week, a bounce back. But it's so weird. Bye week, you're supposed to get healthy. Feels like this team might be more injured than they were after the game against Iowa State.
Yeah, Kyler Schott's now going to be out for a little bit with a leg thing. So, they've gotten a little bit. But they've got some depth on the offensive line. And they're certainly, I think, going to get Larrick Jackson back probably next week for the Michigan game. So I think they're, going to be fine there. But the defensive backfield is where they've got to get healthy and healthy soon. And, there was a lot of buzz because Kayvon Merriweather had, put up this Instagram post that he was back, but he's apparently not back. Hankins, hamstring thing, still, those things are tricky. And I just wonder if they're just being extra cautious with some of these guys just because they know they could trot out anybody and probably beat right. Middle Tennessee this week.
Right. So if the shooter's out, does that mean maybe more of Britt? Do we get? I know they're very high on him. Will we see more of him, or who slides into that right guard slot?
I would
Banwart?
That they're probably, they're going to put Banwart in there, I would think, first, and then they'll probably juggle things around. You might see, Kellenberger at left tackle again with, one of the Paulsons moving over to guard, with Levi moving over to guard, and Tristan moving back over to the right side. And I think that'll be kind of the two main combos that they work with on Saturday.
Scott Dochterman from The Athletic had a piece talking about the possibility Iowa-Illinois next year playing at the White Sox Stadium, something maybe would create a little bit more buzz, certainly more buzz. You were in Champaign-Urbana last year. Not a whole lot of people belly their way through the turnstiles.
A good number of Iowa fans mm-hmm. do, but I think last weekend was probably the best Illinois crowd wow. I've seen in a long, long time. And, part of that was due to probably about 20,000 Nebraska fans in the stands, too. But they actually had more than 100 students there because they let them in for free and they actually showed up. It's just
interesting.
It's really hard to generate a lot of fan interest in Illinois. Now, would playing at Guaranteed Rate Field get people there? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an interesting idea. I just don't think anything's ever really going to come of it.
Yeah, Chicago, maybe the Bears are playing, if they get lucky and the Bears are in town the next week. I like it. It's something different. But you're right, Tom. It'll be difficult, I think, to get traction. There's a Big Ten West game I want to get your opine on, if you will. Because I'm going to use it in my picks, unless you talk me out of it. Minnesota and Purdue, you have any opinion on this game?
I want to know if Sindelar's playing.
I guess he's getting close.
Yeah, he's cleared the concussion protocol, but Jeff Brohm the whole week, because I've been kind of eyeing that game as well, and he's just been really cagey about whether he's going to play or not. I think that's the difference in the game. The thing that's really kind of stunning is Purdue's run game is just non-existent, and it's never been really good, but it's just non-existent, and they've lost the middle linebacker's name escapes me right now.
Leading really tackler, yep.
Yeah, and they've lost him, and their defense is just kind of not as good. I don't think Neal is there either. So they've just really kind of got gutted up the middle, and you wonder if but I'm not in love with Minnesota either because they could easily be 0-3 as opposed to 3-0 right now.
And that's kind of how I see it, Tom. But a lot of my Trent, well, you know, they lose those games last year. Tap the brakes a little bit. They're finding a way to win. So I'm with you. Glass half empty on Minnesota, who I was my pick to win the West. And I'm going to look awful again. But, you know, maybe Trent's right. Maybe that this team is better because they're finding a way to win the games that normally would have gone in the loss column. Buying that, Tom?
Yeah. Yeah, you could say that. You know, maybe they've got a little Iowa 2015 magic where they just kind of win games that just, you know, inexplicably they figure out a way to win. This might be one of those years for the GOAT.
Tom, last thing for you. This has been certainly one of the more memorable bye weeks that Iowa's gone through and what you've gone through. On the message board, you deal with a lot of different kind of people, a lot of people that get fired up at times. What's it been like for you this 2 weeks with what happened with the band, coupled with Carson King and that story in the Des Moines Register and on and on and on? What's it been like over at Hawkeye Report?
Well, it's been a zoo. It's just been crazy. And I'll be so glad when 11 a.m. tomorrow is here, because then we can all kind of, it's the combination of kind of hot button stories, but also there was nothing else to talk about. You know, it's just, there was nothing to get excited about or get frustrated with. It was related to football. And so these two stories just took on a life of their own. And then the volley back and forth between Pollard and Barta and Harold and the band and just all that stuff going on. And then, you know, the unfortunate stuff with Carson King. I mean, it's taken over. It's taken on a life of its own. And, you know, I'm really happy that people are still kind of sticking with Carson. Absolutely. and that he's ended up raising a ton of money for the Children's Hospital. And I hope Saturday, at the end of the first quarter, somehow they get him down on the field to wave to the kids with the players. I think that would be really cool.
I couldn't agree with you more. Tom Caker. Tom, we will catch you, I'm guessing, en route to Ann Arbor next week. But we look forward to that game. Not that we're wishing, well, kind of are, because Michigan-Iowa is going to be massive. Cannot wait. Tom, thank you. We'll talk to you next week. Appreciate it, Tom Caker.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Yep, good to talk to you, Tom Kickard. HawkeyeReport.com. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. Dylan Montz will opine on Baylor, Iowa State. Ames Tribb is where you can read Dylan and Travis and everybody else at that fine newspaper. We are here until noon. It's Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460. Mirror, mirror on the wall, where will the fairest of them all be on September the 28th at Children and Family of Iowa's Princess Party? Make your reservations now. Visit cfiowa.org/events for more information.
Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.
Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO. Thank you to Tom Caker, HawkeyeReport.com. Final segment here of the 10 o'clock hour coming up at 11. We're busy. We're going to talk Chiefs. We're going to talk Vikings and Bears. We will talk to Bama Bob. Trent Bama and I will go around college football, give away some barbecue, our picks, lots to jam in the 11 o'clock hour. Let's take our time with Dylan Montz, Ames Tribune, AmesTrib.com. Last year, this was a two-touchdown score, 28-14. Don't remember much about the score, but we'll never forget what happened during the football game. Alex Halstead, Dylan Montz joins the program. Dylan, Trent, and Ken, thank you for coming on. How are you, Dylan Montz?
Yeah, doing pretty well, guys. And you're right, last year's game was memorable for more reasons than just another win on the Cyclones match.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Brock Purdy was so efficient in that game, as he really was throughout most of the last year and so far this year. He's really taken his game up. And, you know, I got to applaud the coaching staff. They really were seemingly keeping him under wraps against you and I, and they gambled and got away with it in the overtime sessions. But none aside, let's go back to last year. This Baylor team, I thought this was a closer game than maybe the 14 points that differential from last. Did you get the same feeling that this was closer than 28-14 when you left Jack Trice Stadium last year?
Absolutely. It felt kind of like a slugfest, and not just because of the literal punches that were thrown. It felt like the teams were kind of playing tug of war with one another. There weren't a ton of big plays that were able to be generated. We've seen, even when Iowa State failed to score a ton of points against Northern Iowa and Iowa this year, He could still pick out a few big plays here or there. Last year, I don't remember any that were massive, and it took a little bit to get end up pulling away and get a couple touchdown lead. But that's kind of what Baylor has done under Matt Rhule is, the days of the Art Briles high-powered offense aren't quite the same, but they really added the defense, and especially this year, transition into a 3-3-5, they look a little bit different. So it is hard to kind of get out and run on them just because of how physical they are.
Yeah, that physicality component is something that – is that really what both these teams are trying to be? Just be the most physical team in the Big 12?
Yeah, I think so. Certainly from an Iowa State perspective, that's what Matt Campbell plays into. He plays into the more low possession type of games, the field position game. I think he's talked about it too. There's sometimes when Iowa State is on the plus side of the field, he'd opt to punt rather than then try to go for it on fourth and medium, maybe just so he can trust the defense and play that type of game. So and Baylor's similar too. Like I mentioned, the 3-3-5, it seems like has helped them so far this year, albeit against a few teams that are certainly not Power Five caliber. But I think they both kind of have adopted similar styles, and that's what makes this game so interesting coming up.
Dylan Montaigne Tribune is our guest. Dylan, you wrote about him, Jaquan Bailey. You know, he seemingly had a quiet start to his senior season. He's really close to the sack record. I loved his responses, though. I mean, the team is way more than the individual, and he's got it right. And, you know, that's one of the mantras of Iowa State football, clearly, as you would hope. And Jaquan Bailey personifies that. I just have a feeling that the one of these weeks, and maybe it's going to be tomorrow, that Jaquan Bailey, gets on the sack stats and really leaves an impact on this game. He certainly do. He's that good.
Yeah, and it's been kind of interesting to watch him specifically when I go back and rewatch these games, because Matt Campbell and Jaquan himself have kind of talked about, offenses aren't doing too much different. It's just kind of one of those things, almost like turnovers for Iowa State, where you don't get any in the first two games and all of a sudden you get three just based off of playmaking. And Jaquan, I think, is kind of he's had to deal with double teams at times. He's had to deal with rolling pockets. He's had to deal with mobile quarterbacks, certainly in games one and three. The quarterbacks have gotten the ball out of their hands pretty quick. Nate Stanley, I thought, did that as well. So I think that's kind of maybe what's kept him back a little bit. And then having any Uwazurike on the other side, draws attention there, and he's able to maybe get free because of tensions focused on Jaquan. Orion Vance and Mike Rose have gotten in there, Marcel Spears. So, he's not added to his own stat line, obviously, in terms of sacks, but it has opened things up for other guys on the defensive line and then in that second level. So at some point you think he's going to get it, and certainly could be tomorrow given Brewer back there and his mobility and maybe his inclination to roll one way or the other in the pocket.
The wide receiver position, we talked about just the depth that is there. So many guys that you can make a case for. Shaw with the size, Skates, a big-time prospect coming out of high school, and, of course, the guys that we know about a little bit more. Does it feel like that rotation is getting settled, or is there still going to be moving pieces out of that wide receiver group?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to watch because the styles of all these teams that Iowa State's played so far are a little bit different. So I think it's pretty safe that DeShonte Jones, LaMichael Pettway, and Tariq Milton are going to be in that kind of core. And then depending on which game, you could see like a Skates or a Shaw jump in, maybe a Landon Akers if you're looking for a little bit more speed. And then also what's kind of impacted maybe the number of wide receivers they're throwing in is what the tight ends have done. Obviously, Charlie Kohler is on pace for kind of a highly productive season. Chase Allen, as he gets healthier, can be in there. And then Dylan Sainer has made some good plays too. So I think that's maybe siphoned off a little bit of what would usually go to the wide receivers. But I think they're starting to feel certainly more comfortable in the kind of depth that they can create there with their pass catchers, because even Shaw, came in 2 targets, 2 touchdowns, 2 catches. So, highly productive there. And I think that's help them feel a little bit more comfortable, as they can maybe trust those guys now that they've gotten their feet wet a little bit.
Have I been overly impressed with Jarrell Brockwin? Because he caught my eye, Dylan. I'll be honest. I have no idea what ULM had in the game at that time, but it was the way he was pointed out on Twitter, from the coach's view. The block, that the second level block he took on his linebacker, he got that assignment. I really liked this kid from what I saw. Will we see more of him perhaps tomorrow? Nwangu seemingly is getting better as the week has gone on. I'm not sure we'll know one way or another until game time tomorrow. Crony's a senior. He's a different running back. He's bigger. Obviously, we know Breece Hall. Johnny Lang's been kind of hit and miss so far. I'm starting to wonder if we're going to see more of Brock as the season unfolds. Finally got his chance in garbage time last week.
Yeah, Tom Manning mentioned him this week specifically. I mean, he was asked about him, but said that he thought he came in and did a really nice job. And in his second level blocking and his pass protection, running the ball, he was physical, and that's what he was in high school as well. So it will be kind of interesting to see what line they walk, because you know, if you think you can get Kane Nwangu healthy, if you think Sheldon Crony can do the job when he comes in there, or Johnny Lang, then you want to preserve him and maybe pick your spots this year so you can keep him below that threshold. But if you think he's going to come in and potentially be the guy, you got to play him. So do they play him right away again tomorrow? I'm not sure. I guess it'll kind of depend on Nwangu's availability a little bit. But I'm with you. I think he's has high upside, and certainly it's kind of a nice 1-2 punch of the future with Breece Hall.
The Oklahoma State hosting Kansas State game. I mean, it's on ESPN Plus. It's the only night game, a primetime game, I guess, or a night game in the Big 12 Conference. Texas Tech, Oklahoma play early. Kansas, TCU likewise. Of course, TCU will be at Jack Trice Stadium next week. Baylor, Iowa State in the middle of the afternoon. K-State, Oklahoma State, is it the best game maybe? The most intriguing game? I'll put it that way. The most intriguing game in the Big 12, would that be it?
Yeah, I think so, because we've seen a little bit of what Kansas State did in its first two games, and then going on the road in its third to Mississippi State and getting a win was huge. So how can they follow that up? What does Chris Klieman's system look like once you get into the Big 12, and can Oklahoma State go and stop somebody? I think it's going to be their big test. So it's outside of Baylor and Iowa State, I think it's one of the more intriguing games you know, around our area that we're going to have. So it'll be fun. And like I said, the Big 12 has looked maybe a little bit deeper, you know, potentially through the maybe 6 or 7 range. So, it's going to be fascinating to see what teams kind of step in there and you know, once they start beating up on each other, what will happen.
No doubt about it. Dylan Montz. Dylan, travel safe. I know you're coming back on Sunday morning. We will talk to you on Monday. We'll recap this game. Appreciate it, Dylan. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Take care.
Yeah, good to talk to you. Dylan Montz, Ames Tribune, AmesTrib.com, AmesTrib.com online. You know, at least Sterling Trent, as I go back to yesterday, when he talked about this K-State-Oklahoma State game, I thought he made a really good point from a betting perspective. Oklahoma State, they left it all on the field against Texas last week.
They did, yes.
K-State's coming off a bye. Off a bye where they feel pretty good. Last time we saw them was Mississippi State in Starkville. What does that mean to you from a betting angle? Could you play K-State in this game because of what we saw for Oklahoma State last week?
I can. That is something that isn't part of some of the numbers that I kind of build with the different systems out there. This is looking at schedules and the impact that it has and the body blow theory. That's what you're talking about here. Or the look-ahead theory and all these different... But it has to be the right circumstance. It has to be the right set there. It can't just be every single time a team comes off a tough loss, you bet against them the following week. I think there needs to be more there. Another component, Kansas State, they don't really have a look ahead here. If they had Oklahoma or Texas on deck next, it would be different here. Yeah, they're going to have their full attention. I certainly like that part of it. I'm still struggling. Even as I went back and watched that Mississippi State K-State game, I still don't feel like I have a great read on the Wildcats.
Yeah, I'm with you, and I watched most of that game live. Here's the thing about that line. It opened 7.5, Oklahoma State 7.5. It's down to 4.5 points now.
Should we look at the public money maybe on this one?
Why don't you?
Because that can sometimes build a little bit more of where the I don't want to say sharps anymore, because this is, I get these numbers offshore.
Right.
So who are the people that are
still betting offshore?
Still betting offshore.
People that don't live in states that have legalized gambling. In most cases,
that is very true. And though we are lucky here that we have it, that is not the case everywhere. So, all right, this is offshore numbers again, where the betting public is, both cash percentages and ticket percentages. So as I scroll my way through, 70% of the cash is on Okie State and 72% is of the tickets.
Hmm.
So it's over 70%. That is that number where everybody is betting, or a majority of the people are betting on one side, yet that point spread is trickling the other way. That is called reverse line movement. I am a longtime subscriber to that. Give me K-State.
There you go. Well, we've got our picks coming up in the final hour of the week. It's a busy hour. We're going to talk Chiefs. We're going to talk Vikings and Bears. Bama Bob Trent and I will take a look at college football from a national perspective. We've got Claxton's Barbecue to give away. Our picks before we get out of here at noon. 11 o'clock hour on deck. It's Miller and Condon, Des Moines Sports Station, 1460 KXNO.